Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Last December, I published a book called The World Upside Down. It was a commentary on our lives today in this country and in other countries around the world. I thought that things were screwed up. We knew this as a people in many respects, but there were situations we weren't aware of. And over a period of time, I wrote 31 different essays spelling out, I think this is wrong and that's wrong. And each one of these items that I spoke about represented something that was upside down. And that's why I called the book, you know, The World Upside Down. I'm going to publish another book in February. And tonight, more than any other night, for some reason, I feel things are upside down with regard to the items I am going to talk about. I'm going to start with the American dream. Remember the American dream? Immigrant families came to this country. They told their children, study hard in school, work hard, get an education, go to college, and you can have everything. And those that did, it was easy to do. I'm one of those, by the way. I'm a child. My mother was born in Italy. My father here of immigrant parents. I was told, study hard. I studied hard. Got to go to college. I worked my ass off. I went to college. I went to law school. I worked hard after that. I made a ton of money. I was successful. I had the big house. I had the cars. I had the country club. I had everything, trips, whatever I wanted. I had the American dream because the American dream is success. You can achieve anything you want in this country. No more, though. I don't think it works that way anymore. I think we're sort of stuck in a rut. Whatever element of society or point in society that you're born to, if you're born into a poor family, you're going to stay poor. If you're born into a middle-class family, if there is any such thing today, you will stay there. In other words, if your father's a carpenter, you're going to be a carpenter. If your father's a ditch digger, you're going to be a ditch digger. And why? Because the American dream is gone. It does not exist any longer. The dream that I explained to you a couple of minutes ago, it's gone. An economics professor wrote an article recently where he said that today our society is comparable to that which existed in the Middle Ages, medieval times. Remember, the king, the baron, or the duke, he had his castle on the hill. He owned all the land below the hill. People lived in thatched-roofed houses. They worked the land for the king, the duke, the baron. And he paid them for that, minimal monies, because it was his land they were working and the produce was his. And the fellow working it today, his father had worked it yesterday and his son was going to work it tomorrow, and it went on this way for hundreds of years. And he said, this is the way it is. We've gone back to that. There is no social mobility any longer in our society. You can't move up. Some people do, but it's going to be very infrequent now. You can't move up as we did 40, 50 years ago. It's wrong. It's terrible. The American dream, here with my words, no longer exists. You're stuck in the social status to which you are born today. That is the American reality. We don't talk American dream, we talk American reality. Being stuck in the same social status to which you will be born. It's a sad situation, but think of it. There's no middle class, and the middle class is the thing that made it possible for people to improve themselves. It's gone. The American dream is gone. Now, I want to talk a little bit about money. It all falls into place here, and this is all things being upside down in our world today. Crazy. I want to know this. Our president tells us, and I love Obama. I supported him. I voted for him twice. But I think he's doing a lousy job now. I've got to say it this way. That's the conclusion I've come to after 6 years. We are told by Obama and the administration that the economy is in recovery. The economy is recovering. We've heard this in the last three elections, the election of 2010, 2012, and 2014. Corporate media, because the corporation controlled the TV and the newspapers and everything. Look, Comcast owns NBC. We're told, and the politicians tell us too, that the economy is back on track. Well, I have this question for you. If the economy is back on track, why is it that we have 2.5 million homeless children today? You heard me. 2.5 million children in this country are homeless. They live in a cardboard box. They live in the woods. They live under a half-beat-up tent. They live in abandoned automobiles. 2.5 million children. That's in 2013. The highest number ever in the history of our country. 2.5 million homeless children. You ask them, you tell them that the economy is in recovery. What a joke. And why are we told this? Which brings me now, I'm not on Obama's ass tonight because I love my president, but he has screwed up. There are some things he's done that I have not approved of. I've spoken about it over the years and written about it, but it seems to be building up now. I feel oppressed all of a sudden. I want to show the relationship he's had with corporate America. Let's start with Obamacare. I think the greatest accomplishment he has had is Obamacare. He has accomplished what no other president before him could do. He's done a great thing because there's so many without proper medical in this country. He's made it possible for most to have it. This will be the thing history will remember him for. And it's a big deal. However, when he was putting together the package, he had to give in certain places. He needed friends as opposed to enemies to get this passed. And what he did was he gave the pharmacy houses, the pharmaceutical houses, the drug houses, the pill makers, a free ride, a free pass. They have certain, you know, charges imposed on them under Obamacare, but it's very minimal. And because of this, the pharmaceutical drug houses did not oppose Obamacare the way they normally would have, okay? Between now and 2020, things are going to get better on drugs. They'll be cheaper. The donut may be totally gone or gone. If you don't know what the donut is, wait till you become a senior citizen. And that bothers me that the pharmacy's got a free ride. Because I'll tell you something, I'm a senior citizen. I've got Medicare, I've got my own supplemental drug policy, my own supplemental hospitalization policy. I have the best of both policies. I pay the most because I want the best. My drug policy, I wonder what its value is. I just paid $184 for a 30-day supply of a blood pressure drug. It was the generic for Darvine. If I buy the Darvon under the name of Darvon, it costs me like $24 for a month's supply, one pill a day. But if I buy the generic, I have to pay $184, and they won't let me buy Darvon. I've got to always buy the generic, but the generic costs more. Well, I called the company last week, and they told me that's the way it is. We have no competition. We can set the price we want. What a screw job. Now, and this is what happened because he made friends. He kept them on his side, the drug companies. Let's talk about the banks. Who has screwed the American public more in the last 10 years than the American banks? We were told by Attorney General Holder, we were told in effect then by the Obama administration, the banks were too big to fail first, and then we were told they were too big to prosecute. Do you know, and I'm sure you do, that no major banker in the United States that was involved in the chicanery which brought down the mortgage system, which caused all this recession, has ever been charged and convicted and gone to jail? Not one. They have gotten a free ride, and they're still beating the hell out of us. They're part of that 1%. These CEOs for banks walk away with 20, 30, $40 million a year bonuses. One's getting a bonus in excess of $100 million for 2013. Unreasonable and ridiculous. And in the meantime, they say the economy's getting better. It's only getting, the market's good. That's the standard they use. The stock market's the highest ever. How many of the 99% own stocks? All right, it's the 1%. They're getting richer, but not the people. Now we go to Iraq and Afghanistan. He got us out of Iraq, Obama. He kept his word. We're going back in. I don't know if I really can blame him there, because circumstances change, and sometimes you have to do what you didn't want to do. And this ISIS thing changes the whole complexion, I believe, of the Middle East. So we're back in Iraq. We're in Afghanistan. Who the hell knows where we're going next? We may be in Syria in a couple of weeks, helping out Assad, the man we don't like. And at some point, we may have trouble with Iran, because the Iranians are never going to make a nuclear deal. They want the bomb. And they're going to get the bomb, and they keep jerking us around with these meetings and meetings and meetings, and then they extend the dates for a solution and agreement. By that time, they're going to have the bomb. So I think that we're doing a favor again for corporate America and international corporations by getting back into the war in Iraq, getting into Afghanistan, and getting into these other countries, because here is what happened. Once Iraq started coming down, the war was toning itself down the last few years, the military-industrial complex, those American corporations that make the airplanes, the guns, the equipment that soldiers wear, they weren't making as much money. Their stocks dropped dramatically because we didn't have to buy that much. We were getting out of a war, and we weren't going into a war or staying in a war. Well, they're delighted now. Because with the activity the last 6 months in Iraq and Afghanistan, the stock of the military-industrial complex companies is zooming. They're back in business. It's good. They got a great future ahead of them, because we know we've had 2 10-year wars there. We're back in. We're in for another 10 years. They're delighted. They're going to make money. Wasn't Obama aware of all this? I don't know. Then let's talk about surveillance. We are the most, I think we're the society in the history of the world that has had so much surveillance. They bug our telephones. They bug our computers. They know where our cars are. They got things in traffic lights. They got these cameras all over the place. Everybody knows what we do. There is no privacy, and that bothers me. I believe we're all entitled to privacy. Unless we're doing wrong. But that's when you start using surveillance on me by court order. But they're just doing this. And they have, you know, they're bugging the telephones of foreign leaders and foreign countries. It's the biggest ever, okay? No question about it. We all know it. I think it's wrong. Forget that. Very few of us protest. People are quiet. They're saying, well, I don't do anything wrong. Let me tell you something. No one does anything wrong. But if you step over the line and you don't think it's wrong, and they do, all this stuff that they've accumulated on, about you begins to look bad against you. Innocent, I'm a lawyer. I'm a retired lawyer. I know about this stuff. Innocent things all of a sudden look bad. They can be put in that light, and that's what's going to happen here. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the companies, the corporations that make surveillance equipment. They're getting rich, okay? Very quietly, they're getting rich. If the economy was in recovery, then why do we have a 1%, 99% situation? Why is there such an unequal distribution of wealth in this country? People need jobs. The people really working are the ones making big money. The rest of the people are making garbage money. How would you like to work for minimum wage or $10 an hour? Most of us do. I don't work anymore. It's just wrong, and I think these things have developed over the course of Obama's 6 years. Which brings me now to something that bothers me very, very, very much. There is something called an oligarchy today. It's become an everyday word in our language. An oligarchy is government by the very rich. The very rich run our government, whether they be corporations or individuals. The very, very rich run government today. Not hard to believe. Who owns Congress? Not you, not me. The oligarchy. The contributions from wealthy corporations or wealthy people control the actions of our congressmen. And to a degree might also control the actions of our presidents. What am I talking about specifically? Recently, Obama asked the French President Hollande that he would cooperate and have France adopt what is, in effect, Obama's demand for global oligarchy. Let me be specific. President Obama wants panels of international corporations, listen to what I'm saying, panels of international corporations be granted power to override the national laws of a country. Panels of, put together, employees of international corporations have the ability, have the power to override a law of the United States or a law of France or a law of China, okay, and determine whether the regulations on businesses in individual countries with regard to such items as workers' rights, consumer protections, inventor protections, and other matters are correct. In other words, if this international panel is created, this oligarchy, this global oligarchy, if it's established, then any, like the EPA, corporations don't like the EPA. The EPA says we got to have clean air, clean water, you're going to kill our people, and they try to keep the businesses in line, and the businesses don't like what the EPA makes them do because it costs them more money, and they don't want to do it. Well, in that situation, they could say to the EPA, your rules and regulations are wrong, and they can change them as they want to go along. If we agree, if our Congress agrees, and our president, to give power to these international corporations to override the decision of member nations. Now, obviously, these oligarchies want the power to maximize their profits and the wealth and power of their shareholders. Interesting situation. This is all going on right now, by the way. And you don't read about this that much, and you don't hear about it that much, because for some reason the media, which is controlled by corporate America, doesn't want you and I to know. But you know who's stopped this from going forth in the United States Senate recently? Harry Reid, Democrat from Nevada, majority leader of the United States Senate, he told the president, that's going too far. I will not permit such legislation in the Senate. What's going to happen after the first of the year? The Republicans control the House. The Republicans will control the Senate. They will pass whatever they want. They favor corporate America. They favor plans like this. And there's a good chance that a law is going to be passed saying we're going to permit corporations, international corporations, to have these panels to override these laws. And it could very well happen, because who owns the United States Congress? Very simply, corporate America. This, what I'm talking about, isn't pie in the sky, my friends. There are three programs out there. There's one for different areas. It's called TTIP for Europe, TPP for Asia, and TISA for all trade services such as accounting. They want to set the standards for accounting and everything else, okay? President Holland of France had the balls to stand up and say no. He said no to Obama on this issue. Again, we haven't heard or read much about it, and we're going to see what happens. But this is what's going on. I want to tell you who else did this. Cheney. Cheney, under Bush 2, wanted to put together a program where Canada, the United States, and Mexico would unite into, in effect, one country for business purposes and have these same powers. Right? Now, these powers would also include shipping more of our manufacturing business, I don't know how much more we have to ship, to foreign countries. This started back with Clinton, if you recall. Clinton says this is the way to do it, we'll have more jobs. And I think Clinton was a great president, but he screwed up here. And how many jobs have gone across the water and will never return to our shores again as a result of how many people are out of work today because of that? I want to switch to policemen now. That's enough for beating up my president. I apologize. I respect and admire him, but this bothers the hell out of me. I want to talk about policemen for a moment, and this isn't Ferguson that I'm going to talk about initially. Policemen seem to be doing bad things lately. I mean, they think they're in the military. They act like they're in the military. They abuse citizens, whether they're white or black. Now, one of the things that burns my ass, and this is in recent months, especially since Ferguson, when people write to me or they say to me, you know, you're worried about the black guy who got shot. What about the policemen who've been killed in the line of duty? Well, I looked into this a little bit. Let me tell you something. It isn't true what they're trying to say. In 2013, something like 58 or 59 policemen were killed in the line of duty, 58, 59, of which 27 were killed in actual duty. You know, somebody shot them. They were with another person. They were in an altercation with one or two more persons, and it was a fight with weapons and so forth. 28 or 9 were the result of automobile accidents, not this white-on-white or white-on-black thing, automobile accidents. So basically, you only got 27 police officers in 2013 killed. Now, the numbers with regard to police officers are accurate because the records are kept for some reason. Now we come to how many black people did policemen kill in 2013. There was a law passed in the 1970s or 1980s that the FBI was to keep records on the number of black people killed by policemen. For some reason, this was never done. They just never got to it. They didn't set up the system to do it and so forth. It hasn't been done. But you know, and I know, the number we keep hearing, and no one seems to dispute it, is that there are approximately 400 blacks in 2013 that were killed by police officers. Well, if 400 blacks were killed and only 27 police officers, don't tell me what about the police officers. I agree, every life has value. No one's life should be wasted. But there's no comparison here. They don't take crap from black people. Whatever happens on the street with regard to black people, the cops are tough and they don't care and they're out of hand and this stuff has to stop. Which brings me to something that happened. It was a long way getting into it. I apologize, but I wanted to make a point, which brings me to what happened in Houston, Texas this past week. A white woman, whose name they did not release, a white woman was involved with a deputy sheriff, Kenneth Kaplan, in Houston, Texas. They were in a loop during a rush hour. You know what a loop is, those circular things on highways. We don't have them in New York, but we had, when I used to go to the Jersey Shore, I had to go in those loops, and I hated them. Traffic's heavy, you don't know what the hell you're doing. Anyhow, they were in a loop during a rush hour. The female driver, the woman, the deputy claims, cut him off. She honked as she was going by him, to cut by him, and she accelerated after she honked and passed him. But he thought she cut him off improperly. So he drove up alongside her car. He took his gun out. She saw him and pulled her head back, and he shot her in the head. He shot her in the head because he said she cut him off. Fortunately, when she lifted her head back, the bullet didn't penetrate her skull, it grazed her head. But she was still a bloody mess and so forth, and the deputy took off. He didn't even stop. He was arrested later on. The woman is okay. It grazed her head, it did not penetrate. She's afraid, though, that the police officer is going to get off. He's only been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He hasn't been charged with attempted murder. This was attempted murder. She says she had blood all over her. She was afraid she was going to die. And I quote, he tried to kill me. I quote, I'm worried since he is a cop. And I quote, I'm afraid they're going to let him get off easy. So far, it looks easy. Aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. His bail is, he's out on bail on a $200,000 bond. But this is another example of a police force gone amok. This police officer, you tell me why. If this woman did cut him off, what the hell's the difference? He has to take his gun out and shoot her in the head. This is what's happening in this country. And she was white, all right? Now let's go to Ferguson. I want to talk about the grand jury report. I haven't talked about it yet in the past several weeks. I was waiting till the dust settled. Here's what Lewis thinks, and it's very simple. Remember, I'm a retired attorney. I know grand juries. I've testified before grand juries. I've had clients before grand juries. I know how the system works. Everyone that's a lawyer knows how the system works. The whole purpose of a grand jury, by the way, is merely to determine whether there's probable cause that a crime was committed. Did a crime occur? And are there reasonable grounds to think that maybe this person committed the crime? That's all. It isn't a trial to completion. You don't have lawyers in there cross-examining witnesses or anything. Now, here's why I think the grand jury report sucked. I have no faith in it. It wasn't a normal grand jury report because it wasn't a normal grand jury either. 70 days these people sat. They heard testimony from 60 witnesses. I can't think, I'll be honest with you, the only grand juries that sit that long, and some of them sit longer, is when they're going after a mafia don in New York City or Chicago, and they put in all this proof. It doesn't happen. This is a simple shooting. In 2 or 3 days, you bring in the handful of people who were there, and they say, there's probable cause, there was a crime, maybe he did it, let's try him and get the truth out. Excuse me. Then the prosecutor goes on television, and he reads this 20-some-odd page report himself on television at 8 o'clock at night. I have never heard of a grand jury report being read in total detail on the television. Prosecutors will come on, generally a federal prosecutor, and they say, we just indicted Tom Jones. Here are the charges. These are the people that worked on the case, and they walk away. This was a big show this guy had. He was trying to show he was fair. What fair? I'll tell you why. Listen to me. This was not a trial. In a trial, there was a lawyer representing the other side. There was a lawyer that should have been there for the dead black man. Okay, the police officer, they said, testified for 4 hours. Everything he said, you accept as truth because no one questioned his veracity, whether he was telling the truth. Let me tell you something. I heard many witnesses, when they were put on by their attorneys, tell a very clear and understandable story. But then when I got up or another lawyer got up and they started cross-examining them, you rip them to shreds. You bring the truth out. Because people testify to what they want you to know, not what actually happened. That's why you have trials. That's why you have what's called cross-examination, so this could come out. There was no cross-examination here. There was no one representing the dead guy's interest. This thing should have been indicted. It should have gone to a trial. I hope the feds indict him. It's going to be interesting to see what the federal government does with their investigation. But that grand jury report, because I'm sick about this, I've had two people write to me and say, the grand jury acted, the system works. The system doesn't work. This was a screwed up grand jury situation, and I'm surprised that anybody thinks worked here. The system failed here. Okay. That's my show for tonight. I've got a lot more about Ferguson, but I don't have time to get to it. So come back next week, and we'll have more on that issue. I appreciate you joining me. Remember, I know most of you listen to the show in the archive version or on Facebook or YouTube, and I thank you for it. And keep listening. Remember, I wrote that book earlier, The World Upside Down by Louis Patron, Key West Lou. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, a sequel and effects coming out in February. If you haven't read the first one, buy it. It's reasonable. It's cheap to buy. You'll enjoy it if you enjoy the show. If you don't enjoy the show, don't buy the book. You won't enjoy it. Thank you again for joining me tonight. I look forward to being with you again next week.